From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in a tidy three-bedroom home in Indianapolis. Carlette Duffy had renovated her home, which is located across from a park and lush green space in a historically black neighborhood. 4 years ago, Duffy had purchased the home for $100,000. She told NPR that it is her forever home. Duffy decided she wanted to refinance her mortgage. Her first appraisal came back at $125,000. Duffy says she was shocked. She says an independent analysis set the home at $187,000, so she decided to get a second appraisal. That one came back $15,000 lower than the first estimate. Duffy said, quote, "There was just a nagging voice in my head that was saying that there was something wrong. There's something wrong," end quote. What was going on? Well, Duffy had an idea, and she put it to the test. I'll quote now from NPR. When she applied for refinancing with a new lender, she left her race and her gender off the application. One of her friend's husbands, who is white, agreed to stand in during the third appraisal. Before he did, she took out everything in the house that might indicate her race, and she left her home. She got another shock when she got that third appraisal back, end quote. What was the number? Remember, she bought the home for $100,000. The first appraisal, reappraisal, was for $125,000. This number, $259,000, more than double the first appraisal. Duffy's situation is not unique. Studies show that black-owned homes are undervalued as compared to white-owned homes. It's just one example of how racism and privilege are prevalent in the housing market. Last week on this program, we talked about the state of the local housing market. It is still booming. And while some buyers and sellers are finding great success in the market, homes selling for well over asking price are making it difficult for many first-time home buyers to participate. As we discussed last week, it's also leading to gentrification in some areas. This hour, we build on that conversation, and we're also going to hear from a first-time home buyer regarding the challenges that she has faced. So let's talk about what we are seeing in the market right now with Tisharta Thomas, associate broker with New To You Homes, LLC, and a member of the Greater Rochester Association of the Realtors Black Caucus. Tisharta, welcome. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you for having me. Thank you for having me.
Tell us about what the Black Caucus, the Realtors Black Caucus, is sort of designed to do and some of the work that you see in front of you there.
Well, we just actually established ourselves this month, April. We're very new, but our goal is to advance Black leadership among Black Realtors in Rochester. There are about 3,000 Realtors, members of the GRAR board, not the board, I'm sorry, there's about 3,000 members of GRAR, but there's only about 100 Black Realtors, which is very shocking. So one of the things that happens is that they just kind of don't stick around long because of the lack of support. So that's one of the things that the Black Caucus hopes to do, not only help in the growing need to recruit more Black real estate professionals, but also to support the community in which we serve.
When we look at the speed of which homes are selling, mm-hmm. what are you seeing right now in Rochester?
So, you know, a healthy real estate market is about a 6-month supply. And that's a neutral market, about a 6-month supply. Anything over the 6-month supply is a buyer's market, and anything less than a 6-month supply is a seller's market. And we are around about 2.5%. So imagine open houses. Imagine when a home is listed on the market and you have several buyers. The wonderful thing about it is there's so many buyers being pre-approved for a mortgage on a daily basis. But now you have all of those buyers out there. You have a lack of inventory, and then you have homes selling well over between 60 and 100,000 plus over list price. So if you take into mind first-time home buyers here in Rochester, the ones that I work with are anywhere between $100,000 and maybe $275,000. But if the median sales price is around $360,000, we see that there's an issue. What are those first-time homebuyers going to do if they cannot compete? If they don't have that money to put down, they haven't, they don't have 20% down or 25% down. And a lot of people are coming with 25% down, or they're coming with cash for the entire transaction. So it is a very, very a bleak time for first-time home buyers. And the agents who are serving, I mean, I'm a predominantly, I would say 90% of my clients are buyers. The other 10, you know, I do work with some listings, but for buyers agents right now in this market, some of the words I just jumped off of my Black Caucus meeting, and some of the words I heard were depressing. You know, depressing. It's depressing. It's depressing. It's very. It's hard to call and tell someone for the 15th time that their offer was not accepted.
Ooh. Well, let me take a phone call from someone who recently backed out of the housing market. This is Simone in Rochester. Hi, Simone. Go ahead.
Okay. Hi. I just wanted to talk about my experience. I was actually in a very unusual situation where I was able to put an offer in on a house with a friend using cash. And I thought, hey, we're going to have the pick of our houses. We did not. We kept getting outbid with other people with cash offers that were willing to, like the guest was saying, spend $60,000 to $100,000 over asking price when these houses are not valued at that. And the only thing that is happening is, like the guest said, people aren't able to buy anymore. I've lived in this city my whole life. I'm 30 years old. My parents owned a home that got foreclosed upon. I've been renting. And, like, if we don't have an option to buy in the city we grew up in, why are we being forced to pay these exorbitant rent prices? Why are people that have had homes, like black and brown people in 19th Ward, that have had those houses for decades, haven't had the money to fix them and keep them up to date? And then you have people, landlords, people from New York City coming in, buying up the property, and it's jacking up the taxes for those people while they're not able to, you know, make repairs in their home. They're not able to pass down those homes to their family members. It's just, it's become a real issue. And I thought it was bad 5 years ago, but it's becoming impossible now. The Swilberg neighborhood, we put an offer in on a house. They list at 165. We put an offer in at 190. We got outbid. The house sold for $220,000, a three-bedroom house with a small backyard. Like, it's just like people in the city that have grown up here and lived here who want to stay here and build their lives here aren't able to. And I think it's really because there are people that are hoarding homes. They're buying houses that they're not living in, and then they're renting them out for way more than they cost to buy them or keep the mortgage or the taxes. And I think that's the real problem.
Can I ask you a few things, Simone, before I turn it over to Tisharda? Because I'm sure Tisharda's got a lot to say about this. You know, so first of all, like when you talk about a home that's listed for 165 and you're coming in 25 over asking, I'm pretty comfortable when I say this. Until recently, that would have gotten the house every time or close to every time.
Yep.
And now it's in the range of near the bottom of where you might get a callback. And it's an amazing situation to be in. So what have you decided to do about this right now?
Well, we stopped. We have our eye on a place that we know has been vacant for a while that unfortunately the person that owned it passed. And we're hoping to get in on, you know, not, this sounds terrible. It's not like, oh, someone died, so there's a house.
No, I understand that.
You know, it's like the only way it seems possible is if you get in before they put it on the market, you know, because otherwise it just seems impossible. So like this situation is very strange. Like it's not actually even my money, like getting the house, but it's just like it was a strange situation that was going to work out in my favor. And it just, we like put in a few offers and we looked and we backed out because it was just too hard. And we did have one of the black realtors, and I was very explicit about wanting a black realtor and working with a black realtor. And I was really hoping to be able to, you know, make that sale for them, but it just, it's not working out.
All right. Well, let me turn it over to Tashardo. If you can stay on the line, Simone, because I think you are certainly not alone in this. Tashardo, what do you think?
Yes, and Simone has some great points about just going back to the city of Rochester and those areas like the 19th Ward and Maplewood and those areas that we have families that have been there for many years and would hope to pass their homes down. But if something happens in which, you know, God forbid they leave this earth and they don't have a will and someone in their family wants to purchase it, and it's just not one of those things that years ago, yes, it would be probably easy, even with the tax auctions and things like that. Like Simone says, there's people who have cash that are going to the tax auctions. They're purchasing these homes. They're renting them out. I saw a 3-bedroom, 2-bath listed in the 19th Ward for $2,200 a month. I don't know any, just a working family that can handle a $2,200 a month rent payment. So there are a lot of things that are happening, especially Simone also had a good point. Those listings that hit the market, and there used to be a thing, you know, with us agents that if before something hit the market, if we knew that we had a property that another agent had a buyer for, we would say to them, listen, we have this property. The seller is not trying to get $100,000 over list price. They are willing to work with a buyer. We can't really do that anymore because, you know, the sellers want to put the house on the market and they want to get the money that they can get for the property. That's the way things are happening. There used to be something called love letters that we could write as agents. And Simone, I don't know if you remember this, but we could write love letters and we could say, you know, this family, really, their church is in this area. And I would even go as far as taking pictures of my family and sending that along with the offer. But in 2019, we stopped doing that because it puts the sellers in a position in which they could possibly violate fair housing laws. So we no longer do those love letters. So now it's just a document. It's an offer. Black and white on a piece of paper, that's all they see. They see names, they see the amount that they're offering, and that is it. They see whether or not they have any grants, and those are the things. And in the grants are also, they're a contingency. So whereas a lot of, you know, people of color, minorities are utilizing, they're not the only ones utilizing them, but they may not have 25% saved to put down. They may be utilizing the City of Rochester grant or the Housing Council grant or a NACA grant. And that is sometimes a turnoff for sellers because it's just another contingency on a contract. Mm.
So Simone, before we let you go, I understand how frustrating this has been. And you're obviously very, very well informed about the whole process and sort of what's going on. Is there something you want to see done about this? I mean, are you kind of sitting on the sidelines watching all this happen thinking there should be a government or a policy response? Or is this just sort of a function of where the market is? I mean, how do you feel about that? Are you there, Simone? You might be on mute. Oh, there you are. Yep, go ahead.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Go ahead, Simone.
Okay. So my thing was, first, I wanted to say, I mean, I know it's like hard when you have a house and you want to get as much as you can for it. But my first thing would be to people selling their houses now that have lived here, like, sell your house to someone that's going to live in the house. Don't sell it to someone, like, ask those questions of your realtor. Is this house going to go to someone that's going to live in it or someone that's going to exploit people that can't buy houses and need to rent? Because I did get priced out of the 19th Ward, a house that I rented in with my mother. The person that lived there was older. They passed away. They couldn't fix up the house. The family had to sell it, sold it to New 19th Development. We were in that house for a year, paying $1,200, and then they raised it 25% to $1,500 with no improvements, and we were forced out. And I would also like the county to put a hold on how many houses people can own that they don't live in. There should be a limit to it, because our city is getting taken over by landlords, and it's not okay, especially since the landlords here aren't taking care of their homes like the people that would live in them and own them would. So from the perspective of making the houses more sustainable over time and not getting them like ruined, we should have a limit on how many houses you can own that you don't live in. We need to get onto these landlords for code violations, start seizing property if they can't take care of it, that kind of stuff. I want to see that. And then also giving like a right of first refusal when these houses come up to people that live in Rochester. You know, like you should, if you've lived here your whole life, 20 plus years, 30 plus years, 50 plus years, and you haven't been able to buy a house because you've been outbid from the market, it should be our turn now. We should have the right of first buy. So that's my thing.
I'm grateful that you're willing to share the story. Thank you for the phone call, Simone, and thanks for all of this.
Yeah. No problem. Thank you.
All right. So that's Simone. And so to Sharda, really interesting point that Simone's making that I want to get a little clarity from you on. When you talk about love letters, again, my understanding is the reason that you can't write those personalized letters anymore is because the concern was, either for explicit reasons or just based on implicit bias, sometimes the white family, or a lot of the time, you know, white families had preference, or black families or brown families were denied, that kind of a thing. And so taking the love letters out was a way to ostensibly protect. But what Simone is saying is, can we do something to at least get certainty from the agents involved that whoever's buying this is going to live there? Is that something that can be done, to Sharda?
So one of the things that happens, we can't really, unfortunately, there isn't anything that says that you have to live there unless you're utilizing a specific grant that says you have to occupy the property for a certain number of years. There's not really anything that says you have to live there. I mean, and there may be a bank grant or an incentive that says it has to be owner occupant. But if that is not the case, then, you know, no one is really saying that. And especially now, you every now and then you may get a seller that says that wants to know more information. Now, if that happens, because we can't do the love letters anymore, a seller may ask their agent that's listing the property, okay, well, where does the family work? Is this going to be a family living here? Is this going to be, are they going to occupy the property? Are they going to rent? What are their plans for the property? But that, I haven't seen that happening lately because it's just more about the money, unfortunately. It's not really about who, I mean, now we may have a home that, okay, they've owned it for 52 years and they want someone that is also going to occupy the property, be a family that's going to take care of the home. That is very, very slim to, you know, very rare these days, very rare.
Talking to Sharda Thomas, who's associate broker with New to You Homes LLC and a member of the Greater Rochester Association of Realtors Black Caucus. Let's continue with some of the feedback from listeners, and this is Teddy in Rochester. Hi, Teddy, go ahead.
Hi, Evan. So I'm noticing that it might just be that the city's revenue is too closely tied with property taxes, which is creating, voraciousness by the city to consume more property taxes and continue to raise those so that it can pay its its budget for the year, what have you. And then that's kind of getting tied in with the fact that if persons who are buying properties for a company or on their own are low-bidding black families so that they can create more profit for themselves, and then gentrifiers coming in to flip those houses in the area, you know, I mean, essentially it's this grotesque accumulation that cannot be stopped unless there is a willingness by the elected legislatures or an intense push by the people who live here to force their hand. Otherwise, I think that this is just going to continue, and it's making too much money. And even if it isn't making money in terms of property taxes for some of the larger owners, like perhaps Buckingham isn't paying a great deal more in property taxes because of the time that they've spent owning those properties. But the renters are getting priced out. And it doesn't seem like any of the properties that are being built, considering we have such limited housing, are designed around persons being able to afford it if they aren't college educated and potentially backed by parents with disposable income.
Yeah.
What should we do? I guess is the real summation of all of that.
Yeah,
Evan,
sure.
You know, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, and Teddy, you know, the point that you raise about you know, cities, really any municipalities that rely on, well, I mean, they rely on taxes, and when they are looking at a chance to redo assessments, and they see this huge growth opportunity, it's very hard for governments anywhere to turn that down, especially when they've been pinched during COVID and the pandemic. And taxes is how government primarily raises funds. There's not an easy way to do this that isn't regressive, that doesn't squeeze, that doesn't offer favor to some but not to all. I wonder if Tisharta Thomas has any more thoughts, though, on that.
Well, you know, one of the things about, you know, taxes, like you said, now we have to look around and we see different things popping up. Now we see construction, we see new community centers, we see things like that happening, things downtown. But just like Teddy said, there are all of these new buildings that are being built or properties downtown. They are not for people who can afford them. So we definitely need, and we've talked about that. My broker and my husband, Christopher Thomas, he is the co-chair for Celebrate City Living. And we at Celebrate City Living used to really push home ownership. And it kind of morphed into more, we're pushing the home ownership, but we're doing a lot of rentals. You know, we're talking to people about renting. But if, like Teddy said, there's not affordable rental situations or home ownership situations, what is going to happen? What are we supposed to do? And I think that that is a huge thing, affordable housing. And just having something, and even if these, one of the things is if we're being, black and brown people are being pushed out of an area, where are they going? Where are they going if they can't afford, like Simone said, where are they going? Where are we going to put them?
All right, let me get back to your phone calls. This is Lisa in Rochester. Hi, Lisa, go ahead.
Hi, I'm so glad that you're having this series of conversations about this because it's a huge issue in the city. You know, I'm just kind of devastated to hear that this is happening in every middle-class neighborhood in the city where people who have lived in and invested in the city for, and sometimes generations, can't afford to continue to live there and have their kids live there with them, which is really undermining the strength of neighborhoods, and including neighborhoods that, you know, have worked really hard to bring themselves up from tough economic times after, you know, white flight in the 60s. You know, people in it's not just, you know, black and brown people who are experiencing this. It's working class people and the working poor all over the city who can't afford to stay in their neighborhoods. And, you know, Swilburg and South Wedge, in addition to, you know, Beechwood and the 19th Ward. And I'm wondering who's going to take the lead on trying to solve these. I mean, given the issue that was just raised about the incentive for the city and taxes, we had a prior person in charge of housing in the city come to our neighborhood in the South Wedge and tell us, well, you should not be unhappy about all these investors buying the properties and raising the, in air quotes, values because it you know, lifts all boats. It's like, no, it does not strengthen our neighborhood. And he just would not listen to us about that. But we need some systemic solutions to this. We can't have, you know, the city become, you know, the playground of investors and people who, you know, aren't investing in and have an interest in investing in the health of the city.
I appreciate that. Lisa, what do you think, Tisharta Thomas?
Lisa is 100% right. I grew up here in Rochester. I've been here for 44 years. So what I remember growing up, being a part of the 19th Ward, watching my grandmother be a part of the 19th Ward Neighborhood Association and really caring about our communities and what's going on. But like Lisa said, if they're not here, they're not present or not, you know, a part of this community, if they haven't grown up here, if they don't know, they don't have roots here, it's hard to see the vision and to see what we remember about Rochester and about growing up here and what makes it such an amazing place to live. So I totally agree.
This is Pam in Rochester next. Go ahead, Pam.
Hi, thanks for having me. I have two questions. One is very quick. that is, do you think that the these inflated rates will the value be maintained? So if you're buying a house for $50,000 over what it was assessed at, will that value still be there 5 years from now, or are we going to regress? And then the second question is can you explain what happens when houses are foreclosed and banks seem to be just hanging on to them for years? They're not on the market, and what I've heard is that the banks are accumulating more and more fees from the people who can't pay the mortgage in the beginning, and then after that, the house is valued at a higher rate so that the new buyer can pay those fees to the bank. I've seen this twice now in our neighborhood where there was a foreclosed house. Nobody could seem to buy it. And then in the end, 5 years later, the house is bought by somebody who's going to rent it. So,
So Pam, I appreciate that. So let's hit the first point first, and it's a great question. So on the subject of if you're going to get value for overpaying, or, you know, ostensibly overpaying. So Tisharda, I'm actually going to give you a little scenario. Let's say there's a house in Rochester listed at 225. It's a house that just 7 or 8 years ago sold for 150. So they're looking for a 50% increase, and somebody bids 325. We've seen that happen, 100 over asking. What Pam wants to know is, are you going to be underwater on that soon enough, or are you going to get value out of that at some point?
I think that what I see happening, I wish, you know, a lot of my first time home buyers have this fear, you know, paying more than a house is worth. But what I'm also seeing happening is that homes are appraising for more. So, you know, in a certain area, now we have appraisers are looking at the comp. So now if we have five homes in this area that sold for that 325 because they had 20 off multiple offers, you know, on each property, and now the appraisal is valued at the 325, then they're going up. Now, the thing that happens in Rochester is that our values stay pretty level. We're not used to California or New York City, or even what's happening in Atlanta, Georgia right now, where you used to be able to get a mini mansion for $150,000. And now those same homes are $400,000 or $500,000. Values don't really change that drastically in Rochester, but we are seeing homes that are appraising in those areas. Now, if there is an area, which I have seen, in the heart of the city, but it's a newer built home, and the value, once they put in the offers and they drive up the there's a bidding war, and it goes up to $150,000, and the other homes in the area are selling for $80,000. Now we have a problem, and the house is not appraising. And I think the other thing about that is that in this seller's market. Some sellers are saying, okay, I will accept this offer $100,000 over asking, but can the buyer guarantee that if this house does not appraise, that they will pay that gap? And some buyers are agreeing to that. But again, first-time home buyers who do not have money set aside cannot agree to pay closing costs plus a $80,000 gap in appraisal.
Yep. And on the subject of foreclosure that Pam was asking about?
I've seen a lot of, Pam, foreclosures and, short sales that kind of sit on the market. We had one that sat on the market for about 2 years. We kept telling the bank it's not really worth what we have. We listed it at the amount that they wanted us to list it at, but it wasn't worth that because it had gone through a winter. The pipes had burst. So many terrible things happened in the house, and they still wanted the money that they wanted for it. So like Pam said, it sat there. It sat there on the market. It just sat there and sat there until someone came along, an investor, and just had the money to put into the house and sell it, flip the house, basically, essentially.
Yeah, wow. Pam, I appreciate those comments, questions, and what we're going to do is, after this only break, we're going to hear from a first-time home buyer. We're going to talk to Lynette Hernandez about what it has been like. A year ago, she and her husband go into this process thinking, we're going to get our dream home. We're going to be a first-time home buyer. It's going to happen. And think of everything that has happened since then. Wait till you hear about this experience. I think it illustrates what so many people are facing, and I think you will relate to it. We're also talking to Tasharda Thomas, who is associate broker with New To You Homes LLC. She's a member of the Greater Rochester Association of Realtors Black Caucus. This is our only break on Connections. Coming up in our second hour, a report from Rock the Future found that only 5 out of 10 kids in the city of Rochester feel like their lives matter to people in this community. Statistics like these have inspired teenagers from across the Finger Lakes region to come together and create a magazine addressing mental health issues. We talk with the teenagers behind FLX Kids Are All Right, talking mental health literacy next hour. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson, and I want to welcome Lynette Hernandez to the program, a first-time home buyer who, well, when you hear her tell her story, I think you'll not only relate to what she's facing as a home buyer, but the challenge of doing this for the first time in a market like this. And we'll welcome Lynette to the program now.
I'm doing good, and you?
I'm good. I know you've been through a lot, and I think it'll be instructive for people to hear exactly what it's been like for you. Take me through what's been going on with your life and with the opportunity to try to buy a house.
So it's been exciting but very overwhelming these past couple of weeks. I've been in this process for the last 2 years now. A lot of obstacles have kind of come in our way, but, you know, just hanging in there and seeing that eventually we will have the house that we want.
Tell me what, you know, sort of led to your decision that you want to go ahead and try to buy a house for the first time.
Not only for me and my family, but most importantly for my kids. I would like to have them have their own space, be able to grow up and like, wow, you know, this is my home base, my house, you know, have their friends come over and just have the experience to grow up and have them have a roof under their head and just have a lifestyle that they never had.
What's the difference in your mind between renting and owning a home?
Renting, I feel like if you rent, you're going to, you know, pay more money than actually owning a house. And at renting, you're not having the ability to do stuff as you can as a regular homeowner, you know?
Sure. And so do you have in your own mind what a dream home would look like? And I don't mean sort of something that, you know, I'm not thinking of like a castle. I just mean, you know, the kind of thing that you feel like should be within reach for you, whether it's a location or what it kind of looks like for the kids and what you want in a house. Have you thought about that?
Yes, I have. My ideal house would be, you know, a 4-bedroom, 2-bath, be able to have the ability to grow my, to increase my family, have another kid, be able to have somebody come and be a guest at my house. I like split levels, so that's something I'm looking forward to, or ranches, and something that has like a nice backyard, something just comfortable, quiet, ideally for like neighborhoods and like towns and stuff. I'm looking like in Gates and Greece areas around there, but I'm very open right now, so it is what it is.
What are your, you know, so what does your family think about the process and the idea of buying a house?
The kids, when we go see houses, they're very excited looking at the houses. My husband and I, we get excited also, but don't want to overthink or have our hopes high also with how the market is.
Sure.
But it's going good.
Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Staten Island, but then when I was about 7, I came back to Rochester.
And how long have you been thinking about what it would be like to own a house?
Honestly, ever since I had my daughter.
Yeah.
That was about 3 years ago.
I hear that. So now, when did you really get serious about the process of looking and thinking, if we find what we want, we're going to try to buy it? When did that really get going for you?
That, when I had first got pre-approved, it was about a year ago. And then when I actually found the house that I liked, I went to see if the bank could give me a little bit more money to be able to bid on the house. Then I found out that the requirements of the credit check had went up. So when they ran my credit again, they said that I didn't qualify. So I wasn't able to actually get that house. So that made me like think, okay, now I'm going to, you know, grind for my opportunities and try to keep increasing my credit to be where I have to be now.
And was that a motivating factor? Was that disappointing? What was that like?
It was very disappointing, but it motivated me more, and it motivated me to help my husband also, because he didn't have the ability to have the opportunity to build his credit either, because he didn't have any. But now that motivated both of us to be like, okay, maybe if we do it together, then it'll be a better opportunity for us to find something, a better house and stuff.
Yeah, and I'm glad you bring this up, the notion of building credit, because for people maybe who have had a lot of advantages in life and have always had good credit, can you describe what it is like when you are trying to build up credit and you feel like that's an uphill battle?
As for my experience, my mother always told me about credit, so I always had the already like the idea of how to build credit. So that was pretty easy for me, but it's at the same time, it's hard because it's like, okay, you're checking your credit. And I know a lot of people look on Credit Karma like, oh, a lot of points went up, but in reality, Credit Karma almost is not really accurate. So it's like, okay, so what is my base number, you know? And so it makes you like discouraged sometimes because like, okay, my credit's not going up. What can I do to make it better? Or any other strategies. But as for like my husband, he started from the bottom and he had to go up. So with that helping him and, you know, him doing what he has to do to increase it, it was like, okay, what can we do? Where can we start? So that strategy, he was like, okay, so let's start fresh, start with a secured credit card, go from there, pay little by little. And then we saw more opportunities coming up, you know, getting pre-approval credit cards and just finding little strategies to help build that credit and have to get to where we need to be.
And so now, after you've gone through what you did, you know, starting a year ago, what does the house search look like right now? How many houses have you seen? Tell me about some of that.
It's honestly been crazy. Like, when we went to go see some houses, like our first houses that we've seen, I told my husband off the jump, I was like, listen, don't get your hopes high. The market's so crazy. Don't get too excited. If we're going to put a bid on the offer and be like, okay, don't stress it. Just let it happen. If it is for us, it's going to be for us and the door is going to open for us. But within these past couple weeks, I think we've seen about over 20 houses and put about 6 to 8 bids, I believe. And no luck yet, but it's been very overwhelming. Even like you could look at houses, like I came to the conclusion sometimes where I'm like, okay, I don't even want to look at houses anymore. Like I'm getting stressed out, but I'm like, you know, I have to have a break because I'm like, this is just crazy. But overall, it's like, I don't stress about it or I don't try to think about it too, because at the end of the day, I know my house is out there. And when that happens, you know, we're going to be able to have the opportunity, like, wow, look how we started and look where we at now. But eventually I know we're going to have a house out there and it's going to be for us. Like, I'm not stressing it, but it's crazy and overwhelming, but you just got to be positive and have faith.
No, I know what you're saying, and I know it's out there for you. I do want to ask you, if you have, you know, experienced what some home buyers are trying to get through, which is trying to figure out, do I put in the full offer on the house that I like? Do I bid over it? Like, can I underbid it? Like, because right now it seems like everything is moving fast and it's a ton of pressure. Yes. Ton of pressure. What have you experienced like that?
I remember back then you used to be able to offer below the asking price. Mm-hmm. So now it's like you either got to bid over $5,000, not even $5,000, it has to be over $20,000 that you got to bid on the house. And with our situation, we've been doing that, or even having to offer a certain amount and escalate it to our highest bid, you know. But it's just crazy how it is right now.
Well, and before I let you go, I just want to ask about something else that, you know, I mean, it is not a secret that this country has a really rough and racist history when it comes to home buyers, when it comes to building intergenerational wealth. People and families of color have long been excluded or discriminated against. Have you experienced anything like that in this process, or do you feel like it has been fair?
No, I haven't experienced it. Honestly, I've seen, like, in certain neighborhoods, there's more ethnicities as like a certain town and stuff, which I don't know if that makes sense or anything, but honestly, I never had that feeling, but I wouldn't have to experience anything bad like that.
I'm hopeful that that will continue for you. And
yeah.
And are you at the point now where, you know, you say that you're kind of going through a lot of the emotions and there's part of you that kind of wants to pull back a little bit. Is there part of you that wants to wait for the market to cool down? Or do you feel like, you know, it's kind of a rocket ship and it's never going to cool down? It's a very strange kind of situation with this housing market.
Honestly, I don't think it's going to get better. I think it's just going to stay the same or even get worse. But that's just my opinion. But if it does get better, then, hey, it may be. But honestly, I'm going to just keep looking until I have my house.
What kind of neighbor are you going to be when you buy this house?
I'm going to be a friendly neighbor, open, social.
No, I have this vision of, you know, you talk about a yard and, you know, four beds, two baths and expanding your family. And you have all the goals that I hope every neighborhood in the Rochester region would love to have families like you there. And
definitely.
And I hope it happens for you real soon. I know it's frustrating. And I also know that you're not alone in the frustration you feel, how fast things move and how much pressure there is. But thank you for sharing your story and absolute best of luck to you, Lynette, and your whole family.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you. I appreciate it.
So that's Lynette Hernandez. Tasharda Thomas, how many stories like that are you working with right now?
Mm-hmm. Right now, I probably have about three of those stories right there. And Lynette is, oh my God, I was getting teary eyed listening to her because I know where she came from. I know where she started, like, she with her credit, and when she actually got married and added on her husband, then she didn't qualify for the grant anymore because then they made too much. So then she helped him, you know, she was helping him prepare his credit, all of those different things. But just I know her home is out there. We have this conversation all the time. It's out there. We're getting close. I feel all of that, but just having the, you know, the I don't know, I feel like it's a, you know, something that I've been given that is just, it's specifically just a heart for first time home buyers and making sure that they do see it to the end. You know what I mean? Because it might not happen when we want it to happen, but it's going to happen for her. And I thank God that she's still just hanging in there, that she is hanging in there. We do. Just in the beginning, all of the fear about credit and wondering if you are able to qualify and all of those things is why New to You Homes came to be. And, you know, we have our first time home buyers classes once a month. I have a first time home buyers handbook, and my buyers are just so invested. And it, you know, this is the story that we can't tell. This is the part that we can't share anymore. Mm-hmm. And it just is. Oh my God. But yeah, I have a few, like Lynette said, you know, 15 offers, 14 offers. And then some that after the third time of hearing no, they just decide they're going to wait. Yeah.
Can't blame them.
Unfortunately. Not at all.
No.
Not at all.
Let me work through some more feedback from listeners. Matt in Penfield on the phone next. Hi, Matt. Go ahead. Are you there, Matt? All right, Matt. I'm not hearing you, so give us a buzz back here. Let me get some email here. Kate says, a buyer flooded my neighborhood this week with a bulk mail love letter offering mega bucks over asking plus other concessions and gave their realtor as the contact. The letter was so squishy in its content, I told my neighbor, who is a real estate agent, that I think the buyers are named after the realtor's garden gnomes. The market and the bidders are just insane, and property taxes are going to get slammed over this. That's from Kate. I think property taxes are already getting slammed over this.
Yes, they are.
Aren't they?
They are. They are. Property taxes already. I know we're in Chi-Lai, and ours have definitely gone up considerably. So, you know, they are. And then as far as the letters and the boxes we're getting, so we have a real estate Facebook page and for GRAR, and we are seeing those letters. We're seeing last night it was disheartening because I was seeing a lot of people that were saying that, oh, if you, the listing agent, if you write with me, then you can just cut out the middleman, which is the buyer's agent who's been taking the people to see all of these houses, and you'll save money that way. And you know, the sellers are paying the commission. So I don't, it's just, it's getting really, really ugly. And I hate to see it. It's getting really, really ugly. But the letters and the mailboxes and all of those different things and volunteering to pay for their moving expenses. And oh my goodness. I mean, they're getting desperate and you can't really blame them. But at the same time, as realtors, we need to keep our professionalism and ethics about us. You know what I mean?
Well, sure. Yeah. I mean, I know how everybody wants a competitive advantage, right? But you still got to play by the rules.
Exactly.
Michael writes to say, I've been living in the same apartment in the Park Avenue area for 25 years because I have great landlords. The only time that they raise the rent is because of increases in fuel prices and when their appraisal is raised. Are there going to be rent increases because of this? I'm sure, right? I mean, like, I think everything is affected by this, isn't it?
Definitely. And because now we have to think about those, the sellers who sell their homes quickly, and now someone's moving in and they have to move out. So now instead of them, they're not moving out purchasing another home right away because of the way the market is. Now they're going into the market as a buyer. So now they need a place to rent. So tons of agents. Do you have any short-term rentals? All of these different things. Of course, the prices are going to go up. And, you know, especially if that property, particular property owner says, you know what? Well, this building around this corner sold for this. I could get that. People are selling their houses and properties when they weren't even thinking about it because of the money. So now if someone new comes along and purchases this property and the rents haven't been raised, that's the first thing they're doing. Oh, we're going to make upgrades. We're raising the amount of rents because we see that we can get this because this building around the corner is getting this. It is a mad cycle.
On the phone, this is Jane in Rochester. Hi, Jane. Go ahead.
Back in the 90s, I saw this news magazine on television, and they were talking, I can't think of the name of the law, but that was going to change, and from now on, we had lost that, and from now on, you can sell to the highest bidder, and you don't have to, you know, worry about your original bidder. You can move people out is what I understood, but maybe somebody else knows more about it, but that we lost idea that you could own something, and if it could be established that more money could be made than legally, you had to get out. Nobody remembers that, but it blew my mind because usually when you buy something, you think, now it's mine. I have the paperwork and everything. And you know, if they want to put a nuclear power plant downtown, I was being facetious about that, they could make more money, so you all are going to have to move. That's an extremity, but I'm not getting any feedback that I've heard this, but that was the way it was. Maybe somebody else knows a lot more than me.
Mm. Tisharda, what do you think? Yeah, thank you, Jane. Uh-huh. Very interesting. Tisharda, what do you think?
Yes, from what Jane is saying, it sounds like, well, if there is a particular area that they're trying to build up, and let's say that there's homes there and they want to take those homes down and build a different, a high rise or something different, that's been going on for a while, where they would ask the buyers or offer them money a little bit more to, you know, move from the area to pay their moving expenses or something of that nature. I believe that may be what Jane is referring to.
In our last minute and a half, can you just offer some final thoughts for listeners, especially for first-time home buyers, but for people going through this process, for people who understand the history of how hard it has been for Black and brown families and buyers, and just what you want people to know about the current sort of climate out there right now?
Yes, I would just say for first-time homebuyers especially, just to think about how hard they've worked to get there. So first, think about how hard you worked to get to where you're at to be approved. And whether it happens immediately or it happens at the end of this year or next year, just the fact that you've prepared your mind, do not, you know, do anything drastic with your credit. Just stay in. We have to stay ready. It's almost like staying armed. We're ready to go into battle. So we literally look at it that way. We have to stay equipped. We have to stay ready. We have to keep our scores where they should be. We cannot let anything hit our credit, those different things. So that's for first-time homebuyers. And for sellers and for agents, listing agents and other agents out here, I would just say, you know, it's crazy for all of us, but just to remember, like I said before, to remember ethically, you know, always think what is the right thing to do. We have to present all offers, but just, you know, under backbiting and trying underhanded tactics to cut people out of the scenario. Everyone is needed, a whole entire team, from the listing agent, the selling agent, the buyer and the seller, of course, the attorneys. Everyone is needed to get through this process. We're all working towards the same goal, which is to sell the property and to get the buyers into their home.
Tisharta Thomas works with sellers, with buyers, with first-time buyers. She's an associate broker with New to You Homes LLC and a member of the Greater Rochester Association of Realtors Black Caucus. And I am grateful for your time, your expertise, and for helping our listeners understand what's going on out there. It's sort of wild. But thank you, Tisharta, and let's talk again soon.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right. More connections coming up in just a moment.